Welcome to the Dad's Podcast, discussions about dad stuff. I am Dan Pelham, founder of the Solo Dad Movement and host of the Dad's Podcast. Feel free to reach out to me and share your story at thesolodadmovement.com, email thesolodadmovement@outlook.com, Facebook, The Solo Dad Movement, Instagram, the_solo_dad_movement, Twitter, @thesolodadmove1. In this podcast, I will be interviewing dads and men from all walks of life in hopes that maybe someone will hear their story and understand that they are not alone. I want to shift fatherhood from boys don't cry, tough it out, and the disciplinarian to a place of love, empathy, and understanding from men who are willing to share their stories and feelings with others. I really hope you enjoy this journey into what it means to be a dad. Welcome back to the Dad's Podcast. Today I meet with Chris, just a dad, an Aussie bloke from Australia. We discuss what it's like to be a solo dad, and we both lost the mother of our children, or in his case, his wife and the love of his life. We talk about all kinds of interesting things and how we do it as solo parents and what we expect from our children and what we'd like the next generation of children to be and how we can come together as a community and raise the next generation of men to be complete humans and have emotions and feel and know that that's okay.
Maybe find an avenue, you know, like podcasting, like video conferencing, where we can share that out as well, because I'm, you know, I don't know what it's like in the States, but in Australia is very much that, I suppose generational stereotype and stigma of, you know, men being tough and just suck it up and get on with it. And, you know, everything will be okay. Whereas clearly, you know, as you know, that's not the case. And, you know, I've been dealing with this, the last couple of weeks, it's quite poignant that we're talking now, is I've been battling anxiety the last few weeks, and as a you know 40 something Aussie bloke, you don't do anxiety, you don't have panic attacks, everything is she'll be right, mate, you know.
right, absolutely. And it's the same here.
Yeah,
it's, you know, I mean, I see a therapist, but I would say I'm abnormal for the males. In, you know, same thing. We're raised by men that don't cry and you don't have emotions. And, you know, I mean, my biggest thing, like I say, I'm sorry to my kids a lot. Like, my dad never said once that he was sorry. You know what I mean? That's just how it was.
Yeah.
I got angry. Here, go deal with it, you know? So I think finding a way where we can actually get a line of communication started to help our kids, you know, and I work at it every day. I know every day. I'm like, oh, nope. Didn't do that.
Yeah, so, there's nothing like children to keep you accountable.
Absolutely. So are your kids in school now?
Yeah, I've got I've got an 11-year-old girl. She was just about turning 11. She's on school camp at the moment, which is, I guess, probably contributing to those feelings of anxiety. She's away for a 10-day camp at the age of 11, and you know, being a single parent, I'm used to just her and my little six-year-old boy as being this little core unit, and we do everything together. And as much as I bitch and moan and complain that you know, I never get some time for myself, as soon as they're gone, I feel lost and not too sure what to do with myself, and miss them and miss their mess and miss their annoying behavior and everything else. But yeah, so 11-year-old girl and 6-year-old boy who's over here in the area that we live in is just a kinder, so he starts kindergarten, so he starts school next year.
Nice. Yeah. And how was your upbringing with your parents? Were you raised by both your parents?
Yep. I've raised in country Victoria, which is a southern state in Australia. Raised by mum and dad. Dad was pretty traditional, I suppose, upbringing. Dad worked, had his own business. Mum looked after the kids until later years, when I was probably late teenage years. Dad went back to teaching. He was a teacher by trade originally, so he went back to teach, and we sort of, I suppose, we got to see him a bit more then. But yeah, look, growing up, My majority of memories was Dad was always at work. We would go down to the shop on a Friday night after school and annoy him until he closed up work.
Right.
But yeah, no, very, very traditional, loving parents. I guess a lot of the things as you become an adult and have your own children, you like to try and extend on the upbringing you've had and maybe integrate some things that you saw maybe not lacking, but weren't there. Like money was never talked about in front of us.
Right.
If my parents ever had issues or fights, we never saw it. It was always sort of behind closed doors and everything was rosy in front of the kids. Right. Which has been a big one for me, obviously losing my wife and having, bringing up two kids of my own. I don't have that luxury of going away and talking about it and saying it.
Right.
And to be honest, I don't want the kids to know to think that that's how life is as an adult, that everything's okay and we're always super strong and we're always on top of our game. And I'm one of my focuses bringing up my two is that they see me when I'm emotional, and if I'm in tears because something upsets me, then they'll see it. And but yep. They also see how I recover from it and how I don't let it affect, you know, the fact that we need to move on and go forward with life. Right. And try and be positive. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I lost my kid's mom passed away of October of last year from alcoholism.
Oh, wow.
So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we've all been, we've gone through it. I know what it's like. I hear you.
It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you sort of got to you process your own grief and loss and everything else, but still right. Be there and be that strong person for your kids and show them that, that we're fortunate to be here.
Right. And to try and sympathize with that age going through that, like you grew up with your mom your whole life. She's probably still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, same with me. My parents were married for 50 years. My dad passed away last year, but I had him my whole life trying to sympathize at 10 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, dude, it's a lot, but life goes on. Like, we have to move to the next step, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that same token, one of the things I'm finding, I thought it would be my older child who was six when her mum passed away. So she had a lot of experience, a lot of memories. But what I'm seeing now is my little fella, who was only two when right. His mum passed away, and he really doesn't have any sort of really solid core memories because most people don't develop those sort of long-term memories until about 3 years old and over. So we have these times when there's discussions or happy memories and that we're talking about, and he'll sort of invent a memory, and I have to really pull up his sister to say just let him go with it because he needs to have these memories that he may not have. So
right.
that's heartbreaking to watch that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. It's a struggle to watch it, but like you said, you try and show them the best way to get through and understand that, we are fortunate to be here and this is your life. And
that's right.
We still got to get up every day and continue on. So what do you do for a living that you get all the time with your kids?
Look, there's so many things that I sort of in retrospect, I'm quite blessed and lucky to have in being able to, go through something as horrible as this. And I work for myself. I'm a website designer developer. So I've had my own business for 12 years now. It was with a business partner, but then when my wife got sick, we sort of parted ways because I couldn't commit to so much time. He graciously, he went and found himself a job and just graciously said, here, have the business when you're ready to do something and go for it. So yeah, I'm lucky in that, I'm flexible work hours.
Right.
Workload, everything else. I really haven't done much for the last few years, and I've just started picking it up in the last sort of 3 or 4 months. And I guess that's probably contributing to the anxiety that I've been feeling, having right. these deadlines and pressures and other people that I'm responsible to,
Right.
It's not an easy path. I didn't realize it'd be so hard to deal with, I suppose. Yeah. But it's good. It's flexible. I mean, if I had to go and do I don't think I could go and do a 9-to-5 job now.
I hear you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. What about yourself?
I do planning and zoning for cell phone towers.
Okay.
Which basically I get everything passed through the city or the town to get the yep. cell phone tower built. I work from home. I've done that for 5 years.
Yep.
There's zero fulfillment in what I do. Zero. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, I punch keys on the computer and I wait for someone to say, oh, thanks. Good job.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I get a paycheck. It's good. Like, there's money, yeah. but, and I'm home with my kid and I have freedom to go see his school and go hang out in his classroom and yeah. do all the little things that, you know, usually the stay-at-home parent does. So I like the luxury of that. But he's 10, he's turning 11 in December. He's to the point now that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing now, is to fill my purpose and figure out something that's more beneficial to the world than just, oh yeah, okay, I built cell phone towers and I made money. Good for me.
Totally. And do you think, and this is why I do, I've got my Just a Dad community going, and some ideas I have for that as well, is because I just feel like, and I'm sure you're probably the same, is I just feel like I don't want that this catastrophic event and happening and huge change and everything that I've been through to sort of be for nothing. Like, I'd hate to wake up one day and just think, well, that was awful, but nothing's really changed. You know, I want to help other people if possible, just through my experience, you know, and that's a fulfilling thing to do. But like, is exactly the same. I think when you have an experience such as that, you sort of, you're able to almost stand back and look down in your life and go, what's it all mean? Why are we even doing all of this? And well, if I can't use my life and my experiences to help other people, then what am I really doing? You know, what's like you said, you can get a paycheck and get a big car and get a big house and everything else, but what does that mean in the long run? You can't take material stuff with you. All you can take is memory and that knowledge that you've shared with somebody else. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of millionaires that are miserable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people. There's a saying that says it's easier to cry in a Lamborghini than it is a Honda, but I just assume be happy walking down the street than crying in either car, you know?
I mean, that's, totally.
Yeah, that's it. And I never, like, her passing, she was sick for a long time. We knew it was coming. She was an alcoholic, so it was a lot of disappointment and a lot of no-shows. And I got custody of my kid at 4, and I have a 17 and a 15-year-old stepdaughter and stepson.
Okay.
Their dad and I have pretty much raised them together. Like, when she got sick, we were like, look, they don't deserve to not have each other because their mom's not around. So we raised all three of them together as siblings. Like, there was never halves or steps. It was just what it was.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, cool. So that was cool. I mean, it was good. But, yeah, once she passed, it was just – to me, it was relief. I'd spent 10 years in depression.
Waiting, yeah, yeah.
You know, dealing with her addiction, waiting and watching these kids just over and over go through it. And I'm just like, oh. Yeah, yeah. And when she passed, my dad passed 6 months before she did. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it was a rough year. Yeah, it was a rough year. Yeah. So, but when, I mean, going through all that, I realize now, one, my dad passing was the biggest blessing in my life.
Yeah.
Because I have nobody else who I have to meet their expectations anymore.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
My mom's going to support me no matter what I do. My dad wasn't always so, and I wouldn't say he wasn't supportive. He was just a very much a 50s strict dad. Like, this is how it's going to be, and it's my way or the highway, and if you don't like it, then take the highway.
totally understand that one. Yeah, it's like our generation. I'm 44, turned 45, and, you know, in a month or so, and I just think, I really believe that our generation is sort of this real crossover where we still have these, I suppose, traditional values and traditional opinions through our upbringing and through our generations before us, but we're looking to do things differently. And I really hope, and I think this is what you're getting at before, is that our kids, particularly our boys, are the first generation that come through where that's blown away. Those stereotypes are just not there anymore. Like my little boy, he's 6 and he loves dressing up and he loves play at the moment, you know, he'd hate me saying it, but he loves playing with dolls, and I'm like, go for it, man. That's awesome. Go for it. That's fine and dandy. But if I had done that at his age, it would have been, oh no, he's a hammer, he's a fishing rod, he's a boy's toy. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's a real change, you know, really subtle and small, but I think that's where those expectations and those societal pressures can change, right from those little root problems of what it means to be a boy, and then further up the line, what it means to be a man.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I grew up the same way. Like, you were a boy, you know, my dad never, ever once said, I love you to me. Never once in my whole life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, but same. He assumed, and he knew I knew, Like, it wasn't a question. It wasn't like, oh, you know, when I watched him pass, like, I waited and I hoped and I heard him say it to everyone else and it never came. And I was just like, well, you know what? I never said it to him either. So, you know, where's the stubbornness? That's the stubbornness I want to eliminate in the next generation of being able to say no. Like, we need to be able to talk and have emotions. And
absolutely, absolutely. And that's a huge one. Like, I write my blog. I'm very eloquent. I'm very open with the way I write, but I still struggle to speak openly about that. So, you know, for instance, someone comes up, I might have had a horrible day, be down in the dumps, I've been in tears earlier, and someone will say, "How, you know, just down the street or at school pickup, hi, how's your day?" "Oh, fine, all good, thanks."
Right.
It's just a natural reaction, and I still struggle. Like, and I mean, speaking like this in a one-on-one where I came to the conversation knowing the expectations and the sort of thing I was talking about, that's okay. But in a, you know, in a brief sort of social situation or a chance meeting or at a party or a barbecue or something like that, I'm happy faces, everything's fine, you know. And that's really, really hard to sort of break down.
Right. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Move that a bit so it's not so there. So it's not so shiny. How's that?
That's good. Yeah, sure. I hear you. I mean, that is something where, and it, even like we go out here, we go out and watch football, you know, on Sundays. You're not going to talk about how stressed out you are about your kid. You're not going to talk about your ex's addiction. Like, you're not going to talk about real emotional shit because the guys are going to be like, "Yeah, we're not inviting him back next week."
Yeah, that's right. Well, and on top of that, even if you do, like, and I've done it a couple of times with like close friends or just people I've known for ages and have known, I suppose, my whole situation. And I have sort of said, "Oh, look, it's been a really rough week," or "I've been feeling like that." And I think the other side of the problem is that men don't know how to handle when another male speaks to them like that. Because you get this, I want a beer. You know, it's I'm like that as well. Like, if someone comes up to me and, you know, or a male, and I say, you know, "How you been?" and they unload, I'm sort of, "Shit, what do I do now? How do I handle this? And what do I say?" And again, we just haven't been given the tools. And like you're saying, like, I'm always with my kids just open about that. I love you. And you touched on that before. Like, my dad never saw, you know, never said, "I love you" as well. But I think now, and this is what I'm, the whole leopards and changing spots, is that he's now 70. He's surrounded by us kids who are now trying to, you know, I suppose, break those stereotypes down. And I've noticed just in the last year or so, he'll sign off a text message with "Love, Dad," or an email, "Love, Dad," or, you know, it'll be, "I love you guys," you know, sort of stuff. So he's really, really trying, which is good to see. So there is hope for the older generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he would sign cards, "Love, Dad," like my birthday card, you know, he would sign "Love, Dad," but he would just never say it. You know, his brother's just sick now too. And like, it's so hard for me because I know him and he's my family, but I so want to sit down and talk to him and be like, "Dude, your time is so limited. Say what you need to say, like, get it out there." But I know, being who he is, he's going to be like, "I'm not talking to that stupid box." Like, what? Yeah. No, you're not recording this conversation. Get out of here.
It's insane, isn't it? And I think it takes like a traumatic, you know, big traumatic event to make you realize just how pointless a lot of that stubbornness is in men. It literally achieves nothing trying to be tough. It's just, I don't get it. Yeah. And I was atypical bloke. I was one of them. I'm hands up, you know, hands up. I was like, "Nah, no, tough as leather. Don't worry about me," you know.
Right.
Cry at a funeral and that was about it, sort of thing. Yeah. But now, now it's just changed my whole opinion, because we bottle it up. And that's when, I mean, I don't know what it's like in the States, but male suicide in Australia is the highest rate of suicide in Australia, men aged 35 to 55. And it's something ridiculous. Like, I mean, I have to find the stats on it, but something ridiculous, like, you know, 6 out of every 9 people that commit suicide are in that age bracket, and they're males.
Right.
And it's because they don't talk, because they don't, it gets all too much. And, you know, and you always see it, "Oh, but he was a good bloke and he always seemed happy and he was fine in life," and all of a sudden he's just gone and you know, topped himself. And this is why, because we just don't, it's not socially acceptable to bleh.
Right. Yeah, no. Well, there's no resources to do so. Even if you want to, where are you going to go? Who are you going to talk to? You know, that's exactly why I want to do something like this, where, You know what? Yeah. You can drive in your car and listen to the podcast, and your story is going to touch somebody, and my story is going to touch someone, and everyone I talk to, at least you can find someone and be like, okay, someone's been there. Someone's been through this crap. You know, and hey, whatever. He can message you or message me and reach out and be like, dude, my life sucks. Yeah, is that a conversation that's comfortable? No.
Yeah.
But it has to be, it has to start somewhere. You know, we have to be able to say, okay, dude, yeah, reach out. Do what you have to. Because in America, every day, I think it's 22 military guys kill themselves every day in America. Yeah. 22 veterans.
Crazy.
And then, yeah, I mean, it was something. It was, I saw some ridiculous stat. Like 50% of the suicides are men age 35 to 60.
You know, it's just, it's brushed under the carpet, I think, too.
Absolutely. A lot,
like, you know, it's my male problems, be it mental or physical, you just tend to, historically, I know it's changing, but historically, just been swept under the carpet so much. Like in Australia, like, you know, prostate cancer, for one, is, has, more people die of prostate cancer than breast cancer, but you just don't hear about it. You know, you just don't hear about it. It's because it's a bloke thing, and you know, oh, it should be right.
So, right.
But look, in that tone as well, like, just I think you hit the nail on the head there. Is just getting the information out, or just getting stories out, just hearing other men talk about what they've been through and their opinion. It can just, if it just strikes a nerve with one person and makes them feel like they're not alone, and then job done. Like, I write my articles, and I've got, 6,000 odd followers on Facebook. And if I write an article, for instance, if I get 100 people commenting, out of those 100, there'll be 2 or 3 men that will comment, right? But I'll get private messages. I might get 5 or 6. And out of those 5 or 6, 4 or 5 of them will be men that I've never seen or heard from before, that I didn't even know followed the page. But like, oh my God, mate, been reading all your stuff. I never comment, but just wanted to let you know this one really hit home for me. Thank you so much. And for me, that's if I could do that the rest of my life and know that I've helped one other guy, that's perfect. And that sort of agrees with exactly what you're saying, is that men don't necessarily want to talk about it, but I think the first thing we can do is just put it out there so that other guys can find it and know that they're not doing this alone.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like, I mean, it's something that I don't know that we're going to resolve as our generation. Like, my honest hope for this is my grandkids can understand that, like, they can look at us and be like, what do you mean they didn't feel? What is that? Like, were they cavemen? Yeah. Like, we don't understand. Yeah. They didn't feel. Like, that's what I, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. Because our generation, you know, it is hard. But again, I've never been married, but I don't think most men can even talk to their wives.
Oh, totally.
About this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's not like you can go home and be like, I'm done. Like,
You know? Oh, look, even when my wife was sick, you know, she battled through kidney cancer for 24 months, 22 months or so. And I think I hate to say it, but again, the fact that I say I hate to say it means I'm embarrassed to say it.
It's okay. But,
And that's what it is. When guys say I hate to say it, it means they're just embarrassed to say it. And I'm embarrassed to say that during that time, I really didn't break down to her and say how scared I was, how upset I was, how I'm not ready to do this, how angry I am that this is happening and how I can't change it. And I never really did that. I spent my whole time just trying to fix the situation, trying to solve that problem, because, you know, us guys are problem-solving nature.
Be strong for your wife.
I was being strong, hold the family together, keep business going, make sure everything's happening and, you know, researching new medications and alternative therapies and everything else, and never really sat down and went, I'm scared. I don't want this to happen. I don't want to lose you, you know, and that's one of my regrets, you know?
Well, and I did a blog when their mom was sick. I had a page called Solo Dad that I just wrote there, and I knew it was a place that my kids wouldn't find. At that point, like, it was somewhere I could go and just get my shit out. And I knew my kids weren't going to look at it. And it was, you know, that. And I'd say I did it for years. And again, I was depressed the whole time she was sick. Like, I didn't realize it at the time. You know, it wasn't at the time. It was just like, it's kind of my story. This is how it goes. You know, it's what it is. And people are like, oh, okay. But once it got done, I'm like, holy crap, I just spent a decade in depression. Like, there's a breath of fresh air, you know, but. Yeah, when she was sick, it was one of those things. And I had several guys, like, just call. Dude, I have a 2-year-old son. I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I've got to lose it. And I'm like, no, you're not going to lose it. I'm like, are you there with your kid? Yeah. Okay. Then you're doing what's right. Like,
being a dad,
like, that's all you can do. Like, it's going to suck, you know? And I'd send him pictures of my bedroom and be like, you see this king size bed? It's king size laundry room. Like, that's my life on a daily basis. Like, you don't get everything done, you know?
I think that touches on a point. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that touches on a point too, is awareness. You and I both just spoke about feelings in retrospect that we realized, like you, depression right. for 10, me, I was scared the whole time and never spoke about it. I think right. a huge part of what we can try and do is by getting stories out and letting people know it's okay is maybe getting men to go, oh, do you know what? I'm actually not real happy at the moment, or hey, I'm upset, or hey, acknowledge it in the moment so it can be dealt with or actioned upon at the time rather than when it's too late.
Right, right, yep. Yeah. Looking back, for sure. And teaching our kids self-awareness to say, hey, you need to feel this now. You know, you can't wait. And my daughter, she didn't deal with her mom's death at all. Like,
She
kind of shut down and went into her own little deal and went to concerts all the time and just anything she could do to not deal with her mom.
Escapism, you know?
Yeah, and she came to me and she's like, so my hair's kind of falling out. My skin is horrible. And I'm like, and you probably should deal with your mom's shit. Like, what do you want me to tell you? Like, you have to deal with it. And she's like, well, I'm like, I'm telling you right now, being a 43-year-old man, seeing a therapist once a week, you don't have to deal with it. You're right. But it's going to make the next 25 years of your life that much harder, and you're going to have to deal with it in 25 years. Like, at some point, you're going to have to do this. Yeah. Just do it. You know, and she's like, seeing my dad pass and go through all that, I'm like, trust me. If I could look back into a lot of things at 20 and someone come to me and say, hey, you're going to have to do this shit anyways. Do it now.
Yeah, that's right. We just procrastinate. Procrastinate with the hard things, isn't it? Yeah, and like I still do that to this day. I still – you know,
but it makes it much worse, I think, you know, dealing with what you felt when you felt it. Like, if you would have dealt with you being scared, if you would have dealt with that with your wife.
Huge difference. Huge. Yeah. Instead of it being a regret and coming up now, it would have been something that the love of my life could have actually helped me with. It probably would have helped her as well. It would have helped.
Absolutely.
Would have helped our relationship and the whole situation full stop. But
I could have said to my dad, I love you, Dad. Yeah. If I'd have just said it, I guarantee you would have said it back.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know what I get? The next
sounds 40, so simple, doesn't it? Sounds so simple.
It does. It sounds very easy, but then when you're in the moment, it's not. Like, you just sit there and you're like, "Yeah, this is sucks. This is, you know." Yeah. But we're men, and we have to just shove it down in there. And that's right. That's the barrier that's hard to break. And how do you fix that? And how do you generationally raise that differently?
Yeah. Well, I think you and I can do it. Yeah. Well, and I think that's like I think. I think the fact that we're talking about, it's awareness in the moment, awareness in the reality. If we can be like that with our kids, then I think that's 90% of the battle. So if I can turn around to my son and say, man, I'm really upset about this, or I'm upset that you've done this, and I still love you so much. I know you love me, but right now I don't like the person you're being. It just teaches them that to vocalize what they would naturally internalize,
right,
is more beneficial because they can show them that, hey, we sort it out right here and now. We talk about it, we let it out, we do it, and then it's not an issue going on. Whereas if we let it go, and I try and bring up examples with my kids all the time where I was a bit snappy and I was a bit grumpy the last few days. It was because of this. I should have done this about it back then instead of now. And I apologize to you for that, you know. And I think, I think just that sort of openness, whether it's an emotion based or, you know, practical parenting or anything based, I think it's I suppose it's hard to describe, but I get it. Actioning in the moment,
Right. Yeah. I mean, like tonight, my kid came home from school, and this kid, one of his friends at school, class clown, you know, oh, he got kicked out of band class being a class clown. I'm like, but did you encourage him? He's like, well, yeah, you know. And I'm like, and I said to him, I'm like, why can't you just be different?
Yeah.
And I didn't even think about it, and I went about my day, and I took him to football practice, and I'm like, really, do I want my kid to be different?
Yeah, like, yeah,
absolutely
yeah
not Like, you know, yeah, I want him to make better decisions, but and he got done with practice. I'm like, dude, I just want you to know, I forget what it's like to be 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not 10 years old. I'm a grown adult. I'm like, and you're having fun with your friends at school. You do well in school. You don't get in trouble. Like, I'm going to ask you to be respectful of your teacher, but just do you. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I'm going to have fun. He's like, I'm going to get kicked out of class. Like, don't doubt that. I'm like, okay. You know, I mean, but he knows. Like, and it's not going to be anything serious. It's going to be goofing around, joking, you know. Yeah. I mean, we spent, since third grade, I've been trying to get him into the gifted and talented program.
Yep.
And finally, this year, he got accepted.
Okay, cool.
School for him is really easy. But when I went to school, I had the same deal. Like, it was easy. And I got overlooked. And then I became the class clown, and I started failing. And
hands up. Yeah, me too. Yeah,
you know, I didn't make it through school. And I mean, and I told him, I've always told him, I'm like, dude, school is not the answer to life.
No.
You know, it's not. Like,
it's a great, because I was exactly the same as you. I was all a bit too easy in there. So find ways to entertain yourself. And that usually meant not what the school wanted you to be doing. So, you know, and I have the same thing. I think my daughter's the same. My little boy's too a bit young at the moment, but she's in grade 5. She's like, we don't do anything, we don't learn anything. And I said, look, what it's doing is giving you a grounding of the sort of information. It's hard not to really talk the system down and everything else, but it's giving you a grounding and an education in a lot of the things you'll need to do and to know as an adult. So if it's hard, if it's boring, if it's nothing else, then come and talk to me and we'll find other ways to make sure, you know, that it doesn't detract, because that's the other thing too, is like in my mind, you know, at this age, like 6 and 11, Just let them be kids. Just let them be children.
Right.
Don't worry about that. So much information and pressure and stress. Just let them build up the shell, I suppose. The person, the information can come later. But just don't dampen their youthful exuberance for life and creativity and idealism and everything else by structure and pressure and that's a tricky one.
Is your education system the same as it was when you were a kid?
Well, that's the problem. See, I've actually got my kids at a Steiner school, which I think in the States is Waldorf system. Yeah, so just for primary school at the moment to see how it goes, because of, I think, a lot of what I saw, the school system here. Yeah, you're right, to answer your question, the same, slowly changing, but basically the same education system it was. That was designed in the 50s, you know, so, you know, the post-war effort to produce the good little machines, one size fits all. Everybody learns the same information, regardless of ability. You're all standardized tests, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I saw how it failed me, like we were just speaking about. So I wanted to try something different, especially for the younger years for the kids. And, you know, I noticed a huge difference moving up. So I moved up to where I'm living now from down south, you know, a couple of thousand Ks away down south. And my daughter was in a state school there, like a normal public school there. And we moved up here and I put them into this, you know, Steiner or Waldorf situation, just because I was seeing, you know, my daughter at six years old, then just the peer and social pressures, like, you know, getting dressed for a birthday party at six and putting lipstick and makeup on and looking, look how skinny I am, Dad. I look 10, don't I? I'm like, oh, no, you're only six. Now we're up here and she's about to turn 11, and she gets home and gets up to go to school, and I'm like, you can't wear that again, it's dirty. She goes, I don't care, you know, whatever. And you know, walking around the house in her underwear because she feels comfortable, and it's just really good, really good to see her become a child again, you know. So I think that's a big problem with the education system. It drives that sort of I suppose that sheep mentality where everybody feels like they need to be the same as everyone else, because we're trying to teach everyone that they need to know the same stuff and they need to achieve to a same level. So that I think subconsciously, although everyone, you feel like, oh, I need to fit in, I need to be the same. And that so really, really, really stifles any sort of creativity or natural bent towards something that they may be passionate about.
Right. Or it's a factory education. Like, it's an education, so you can go to a factory. That's what it is.
Correct.
The 40s and the 30s.
That's right. Producing little workers out to somebody.
Our kids have more technology than we would have ever been afforded the
yeah.
to have through college in their pocket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're giving them a factory education, and they have the world in their pocket. Like, what are yeah, we, yeah. you know, that to me, it's hard to watch. But what are your choices, you know, unless you want to have a private at home teaching your kid, like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, and there is private school here, but it's just outrageous.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, and private schools come with their own, come with their own issues as well. Right. Their whole elitism and old school boys clubs and and class divide. It's sort of a rock and a hard place. It's a catch 22.
Absolutely,
it really is. But they need the education. So what do you do? You know, I'm not in a position to sell. You know, to home educate the area I live in. If you do a bit of digging one day and have a look into this area, very known for its alternative lifestyle. So there's a huge homeschooling community up here. You know, I could go into a lot of other things that I find quite quirky. I'm just going to pick this up, move a bit. The sun's getting a bit warm. It's a hard, tough life. So there we go. That's a bit better. To have this education system up here, it's a bit of a natural thing, whereas I know back down south, you know, a bit more traditional sort of area, it's, you know, people look at you a bit weird if your kids go to a Steiner school or things like that. But it's really, really refreshing to be in an area that's very accepting of how you choose to live your life, you know. And I think that'll be the natural progression, you know, hopefully globally, where people will just accept others for living the way that they want to live. And educating their kids on how their education and raising their children, you know, however they want. Right. But it's a long way to go. But I think we can be the start.
And I think the hate for the prejudice, I don't know how it was when you were growing up, but prejudice here in the 60s was horrible. Like,
yeah, totally.
Very racially divided country. And it's still, I mean, they still have a problem. Like,
yeah,
you know, I can't complain. I live in a nice neighborhood where I can leave my door unlocked and I don't have to worry someone's going to rob me. Like,
yeah.
You know, but I work four jobs so that I can live in this neighborhood and raise my kid here. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's not like, oh, it's easy, but you know, I just don't see that being this next generation, our kids. I don't think they're going to, even if they're raised with it, are going to understand that hate.
No, totally.
Because it's the one, the information's available readily. When we were grown up, you know, it was a safer world. Because you didn't know the kid down the street got kidnapped until the newspaper came out next week.
That's right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's theoretically a scary world because there is so much information on tap, but there's also a more globally accepting world because there is so much information on tap.
Right.
You know, they all have to do is watch YouTube clips or you're right. You hit the money on the head. Is it? I don't think our kids will understand how racism could have existed,
right?
You know, they see differences in people, but it's just it's literally a physical, or I suppose a psychological separation. Oh, that person over there's got long hair. That person over there's got different coloured skin.
Right.
But there's no prejudice about it. It's just a physical difference.
Right. Absolutely. And you look at the transgender and the choices people are allowed to make now.
Yeah.
That, I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't know anyone was really gay.
No. You did until later life, and when someone said, "Oh, did you realize that kid at school was gay?" And, "Oh, no, really?" Or,
yeah.
You know, it was hidden. But then that's the thing. And again, it goes back to what you and I have been saying since we started talking. It goes back to that openness and awareness and acceptance of difference. Yeah.
Right. And the feelings is the part that we got to get through to our boys, is the feeling part.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
That's where
it's okay to feel. I suppose it's not the hardest part, but definitely going to be one of the most instrumental parts. Because I mean, whether you like it or not, men have been the perpetrators of, I suppose, the vast majority of hatred and prejudice and stereotypical reinforcement throughout the ages,
absolutely.
So it's up to us to make the change.
And I talked to another guy who brought up a perfect example. He said, you know, most guys are the letter C. A human being is a perfect O. we deny half of who we are. 100% ignore it and deny it. And he's like, if we could all be human, if we could be human and just make ourselves a complete circle human, he's like, I think the world would be a much different and better place.
Oh, it'd be hugely different. Hugely different. Even down to things of, you know, like feminism, like, you know,
right.
In my mind, everyone should be a feminist because all it's saying is equality for men and women. We are all equal. That's sort of in my mind, and you know, I hope that. And this is what I impress again on our boys: it should be not even a conversation. You know, it's like the word feminism shouldn't exist. It should be just the status quo. You know, the fact that you know some people or some there are people out there that you say feminism and it's oh no, it's man hating and it's women better than men and they need, you know, it's really frustrating and amazing that still exists in this world. But I think that will die out in the next generation or two, but
I hope so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But you know, but even talking openly like this about something like feminism, I can already hear the haters and the, else, it's just, which is just crazy.
What do you guys know about feminism? You know, what do we have a right to speak on that for?
it's insane, isn't it? Yeah.
Crazy. Are your kids going to go to college?
That's going to be something. Job dependent, you know, like I'm a huge one. Again, when I was growing up, I suppose I'm a bit of an ideas man, a bit of a high level thinker. I have these amazing concepts and ideas, and I always have, even now to the point that it keeps me awake at night. You know, and I really, when I grew up, I think again in retrospect, that a lot of every time I sort of had an idea, the first thing that would happen was like, no, can't work. Because have you thought about the reason it won't work, how it won't work, why it won't work, and is that going to make you money in later life? Is it going to give you a good station in life? Da, da, da. All those traditional sort of things. So I'm really, really conscious and aware of fostering that creativity in my kids. And especially I see my daughter, she's 11. She loves baking cakes. She loves, you know, she watches, you know, DIYs, you know, 5-minute crafts, all this stuff. And she'll walk out of the lounge room at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday and go, Dad, I need some glue, some sticks, a piece of paper, 7 bottles and a knife. Okay, here we go. And she'll create something beautiful. I really want to foster that creativity. And to answer the question of college, I'll only push it if they show an interest or a leaning towards something that I think a college degree can help, you know, a university degree can help. So if it's a, you know, medicine or something you do need that sort of in-depth knowledge on. But, you know, I was great at school. You know, I did physics and chemistry and 2 highest maths because I was told to give you the most opportunities. And here I am, 13,000 careers down the path and I'm a website designer. You know, and I should have done graphics and art and design and everything else. But so I'm a huge advocate for self-education, I think. And like you were saying, the availability of information now and the ability to self-teach is going to negate a lot of what a lot of colleges teach. I think, you know, there's always going to be like things to be a teacher or a nurse or a doctor or a lawyer or an architect where you do need a lot of academic knowledge behind you to be able to perform that job. Absolutely. So if they show any interest in anything like that, I'll be right behind them with a shovel trying to scoop them into it. At the moment, you know, ask my daughter what she wants to be, and she wants to have her own bakery. You know, doing some crazy cupcake style sort of thing. And as implausible as it may sound to me at the moment, I'm not going to say that to her. I'm going to say, that sounds great. Good on you if that's what you want to do. And so I said to her, you know, we talked about talking about high schools the other day about, you know, because we did primary school, then high school, then university over here. And I was saying, I'll only move you to a different school if you all of a sudden – take up a sport that you're passionate about, I'll find a school that really pushes that sport or supports it. Or, and as far as university goes, and she shut me off right then and said, no, culinary school, Dad, culinary school. I'm like, okay, fine. Nice. You know, that's, if you have that dream, I think that's the big thing, is just not stamping on kids' dreams, because when right. you stamp on a dream as implausible or impractical as you know it may be, I think that ends up in self-sabotage for them in later life, where they, like I do, I have an idea, it's great, and then by the time I've thought it through, I've talked myself out of it for because all the reasons it won't work or it won't happen or anything else, and that's something I just don't want to see in my kids. So college, if it suits.
Nice.
Sure, yeah.
I hear you.
What about yourself?
My daughter is looking to go to college. I've tried, she has an apprenticeship available at my tattoo artist if she ever wants it.
Cool.
I've tried to talk to her into it. I'm like, go to a community college, which is cheap, local, for 2 years, get an apprenticeship as a tattoo for 2 years. I'm like, and then at that point, you can do whatever you want, but you have a trade and an education.
That's right. Yep.
You can do whatever you want. I don't care. You know, and now she's kind of leaning towards the military a little.
Okay.
You know, which she wants to be a nurse. She's like, it's 20 years and I'm done. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, you're in the military and that's, you know.
That's another ball game as well, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, and my middle son wants to be a chef. 2 culinary schools, same deal, And of course, my littlest doesn't. He's 10 and he thinks he's going to play professional football, so.
Yeah, that's right. I think my littlest, I think he's going to be Batman when he's older at the moment, so.
Yes, absolutely. And the crazy thing, though, like you were talking about your daughter's cupcake thing being crazy. It's not anymore in today's world.
No.
You know what I mean? There's kids playing video games. They're making 7 figures.
I know. It's like, I've got my oldest nephew's cousin that he lives with is she's at uni doing something, but it's not her passion. And she sits at home and films herself gaming, doing something pays her rent and her food for the week. That's the sort of stuff. And I think still a lot of people our age that you just can't comprehend it. Luckily, I'm in the online space. I see it every day. You know, I deal with that sort of that stuff, and I'm exposed to it. But I've got friends my age that are like, that's not a career. You can't do that. But we truly are a global community as far as options for income earning now. And that's
absolutely. I mean, this podcast, I talk to enough men in enough places around the world, and someone's going to start sending me a check for it. You know, it's like,
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, wow,
it's crazy, isn't it? It's the beauty of it is that you can be as micro niche as you like because it's global now. Australia's got the population of LA, you know, in a whole country. So to try and have a micro niche idea just in Australia, you know, forget about it. But you know, I remember this years and years ago. I was in Thailand on a holiday and a bit hungover, lying on a futon there, just watching TV, and they only had American channels on there. And I was amazed that they had a channel dedicated to trout fishing, because I'm a fisherman. I love my fishing. How can someone convince a network to pay their money and pay for everything dedicated just for trout fishing? I mean, in Australia, you'd be lucky to get funding to have a fishing show about everything, and it'd have to be put on by networks and everything else because we've only got, you know, a small market. And now we have, this, like you said, the global connection just you know, through the online space means that you could do that from here now. You can do that. And I found that when I started Just a Dad, I thought, I'm just going to write this down. Don't know if there's any other single dads out there. Don't know particularly if there's any other solo dads out there that are struggling because they've lost their wife through illness or through accident or whatever else. But I'll just start writing and just went and just took off. And a lot of them are women. And a lot of the feedback I get is so nice to hear from a guy's point of view, what it's like and how it's like being a parent and how the trials and tribulations of being a solo parent after loss from a solo parent from a dad's point of view, because again, guys don't talk about it. It's crazy.
And there is, I think, you know, there's more solo moms.
Oh, yeah. Well, traditionally, you would think
traditionally,
so.
And because guys leave. You know what I mean?
Like, when it gets too hard, they go.
You know, they're like, okay, you want me to be emotional about this? I'm out. You know? It's a fact that a lot of women raise their kids. But, you know, and it's funny because I'll talk to, like, single moms, and it's so hard. And I'm like, really? You know what I would give for every other weekend? Like, honestly, some months, if I could be like, okay, you guys are going to go to your mom's for the weekend, I get 48 hours.
Oh, man. I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like you said earlier, though, once they left, you'd be horrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that.
I accomplished nothing. Yeah. They're like, oh, we'll keep your kid overnight, go out and have fun. I'm like, go out and do what? Like,
yeah, that's right. All that means to me now is sleep in my own bed and wake up when I want and not have to make school lunches. That's about it.
Yep, absolutely.
Other than that, it's like, when are they coming home? Yeah, right. That's right.
I'm going to do the laundry and clean the house because that doesn't get done real well. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
awesome. I mean, it's cool that we hooked up.
For sure, man. I'm always up, as you can see. I don't mind a chat, so I'm always up for a chat. If you need anything else, it's just I think we barely touched the tip of the as usual
yeah,
with
absolutely.
The tip of the iceberg.
And I do. I mean, I'd love to have guys like you that are willing to come back and just talk here and there. Monthly, every 6 weeks, whatever. Because again,
for sure.
We can sit down and talk about this forever and not even touch the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that's right. And just go around in circles. But look, like we said, that's why I'm happy to people always ask me, would you do an interview here or would you be happy to write about this? I'm like, oh, as long as it gets the word out, I don't mind, And monetary concerns, that's not even anything. That's if I ever happen to make money out of this, then that's my dream come true. But I sleep. The nights I write an article or do an interview, I sleep like a baby. I feel like I've done good, and that's right. and fulfillment, and and happiness is just it's far more important than money. And that's one big thing I learned after losing my wife. Like you probably the same thing is like it just it's not about materialism. It's not about anything. It's about just being able to wake up every day and knowing that my kids are happy, I'm happy, they're happy, and that we can afford to continue being happy. So,
and then be able to maybe make a difference in someone else's life along the way.
Oh, totally. And I think that's part of it too, is if I can show other people that what I've been through and where I'm going and what I've been doing, that I can be happy means you can be happy too. If I can sort of like, I hate to say it because I don't want to like pat myself on the back or get it out loud and proud, but seriously, if I can do it, anyone can do it,
Well, I hope you enjoyed this podcast with Chris from Australia, and I hope that this reaches the person it's supposed to reach, that figures out they're not alone and someone else has been through their story, and maybe they'll reach out and want to share with us too.